What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
That's showbiz, baby. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
At the turn of the century, Coney Island was a place for fun. You might hang out at the beach, eat ice cream, ride some amusement park rides, and see a sideshow. Oddly enough, that sideshow might resemble something close to a fully functional neonatal intensive care unit, complete with makeshift incubators filled with sleeping, premature babies. We've talked about a lot of strange baby trends over the years on Ghost Town, including baby cages, or most recently, the Target Sperminator, but today we're talking about the bizarre and entertaining origin story of the baby incubator, from Coney Island sideshow to a hospital near you. Turn of the century, hospitals were very ill-equipped to care for premature babies, and mostly it was a death sentence if your baby was born early or underweight. Caring for premature babies was expensive and many thought pointless. Incubators were so new and unusual that few doctors believed in its life-saving potential. Developed by Stéphane Tarnier, a French obstetrician who had seen them being used at a zoo, Tarnier adapted an animal incubator he'd seen used on baby chicks for little baby humans. But the idea seemed insane in America, until Martin Kauni, a German doctor, though different sources say he wasn't a doctor, which is not looking good for his doctorhood. Anyway, he thought it was a genius and brought it over to America. But first, Kauni got himself some incubators in Berlin. At the 1896 World's Fair, Kauni saw a display of several premature babies presented by a man named Pierre Boudin, a French physician who was conducting research on incubator technology. Picking up the baton where Tarnier had left off, some sources say Kauni worked under Boudin, others don't. Anyhow, in 1896, he had come to the World's Fair with a bunch of incubators and a bunch of premature babies that he had acquired on loan from a Berlin hospital. Kauni immediately realized that the unusual exhibit would save babies' lives, and that the public would pay to see babies in incubators. The sight was so unusual that people crowded into the display, paying money while Boudin explained it all. From there, Kauni grabbed some incubators of his own and traveled to expositions, including an event in London in 1897 and the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo in 1901. 1903, he came to the US of A with little baby incubators and set up shop not in a medical facility, but in a summertime sideshow, which would continue until the early 1940s. The show was literally just a bunch of preemies in incubators, with Kauni talking about the machines themselves and how they work. In my experience, maybe a county fair, but with small children fighting for their lives. The show would set up shop in Luna Park on the beach every summer at Coney Island. Outside, a sign proclaimed, "All the world loves a baby," and barkers yelled, "Don't pass the babies by," and people loved it. Let's take a break. A woman named Lucille Horn remembers her parents telling her that they took her to Martin County in 1920. The doctors who birthed her gave her a bad prognosis. She was just 2 pounds, and her twin had died at birth. Quote, "They didn't have any help for me at all. It was just, you die because you didn't belong in the world," she later recalled. So her father took her to the only place he thought might be able to help, Kauni at Coney Island. The Brooklyn Daily Eagle described Kauni's setup as, quote, "seriousness and value of the system shown. A visit to Kauni's showcase revealed rows of warmed, glass-fronted incubators supplied with filtered air containing, quote, little pitiful pinched-looking waifs. The only thing that indicate that they are alive are the healthy color of their little faces and the faint flutterings of movement which are perceptible on closer inspection." I also want to emphasize that Kauni was, again, we're not sure if he was a doctor at all. He was definitely a businessman, though, and an entertainer, though he did have nurses to help during the show. Kauni reportedly would dress up the infants as they grew and put them in adorable outfits, oversized or not, and his nurses were known to slip a ring around the entire wrist of a preemie baby, showing just how teeny tiny these babies actually were. Speaking to the New Yorker in 1939, Cowney explained, quote, "All my life I've been making propaganda for the proper care of preemies, who in other times were allowed to die. Everything I do is strictly ethical." I mean, yes, yes, but again, you're a sideshow guy in Coney Island. We'll let it slide for now. Still, I have to give him credit. By one estimate, Cowney saved the lives of 6,500 infants, to say the least. But by the early 1940s, interest in Cowney's exhibition had waned, and hospitals were actually starting to really study premature birth, even opening wards to care for premature babies. Can you imagine? Cowney died in 1950 at age 80. At the time of his death, he was reportedly broke, but he was memorialized in the New York Times as, quote, "the incubator doctor," which I think is fairly flattering. In 2015, 2 years before she died at the ripe old age of 96, once preemie Lucille Horn was asked by her daughter as part of NPR's StoryCorps program about being on display as a tiny infant. "It's strange," she said, "but as long as they saw me and I was alive, it was all right."
Looking back on anything to do with circuses or sideshows, in my opinion, I think a lot of people's opinion, maybe not everybody's, people don't look back on it too fondly.
No, no, absolutely not.
I remember going to, in the 80s in New York, I mean, you know, I've been to Coney Island, but there was no sideshows technically. It was just weird oddities sometimes, but I remember going to Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus in New York City. Maybe they had it at Madison Square Garden, I don't know, but it was a pretty huge deal. Mm-hmm. And looking back at it, I was like, I never really love circuses even, but I it wasn't like an ethical thing. Obviously, I was 10 years old, but I was just like, I don't really love this. Something just feels off about it, or I just don't like it. And not to say there's not a lot of talented people and hardworking people, but it's exploitive.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's exploitative and uncomfortable because we are celebrating outliers and oddities in the experience of the people watching and in the context of that historical place and time. But I thought this was really interesting because, yeah, you think about bad things. You think about violence. You think about manipulation. You think about abuse coming out of circuses and sideshows and taking people who don't have a good lot in life and putting them on display, and how like horrific that really is, and how that experience is really embarrassing for us as a country now and traumatizing to nearly everyone involved. So it's interesting to think of something in that context actually being helpful.
All right, so we're one and one.
History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries. And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.